Hello, Texans. Welcome to the program, which is coming to you from Orlando, site of the NFL annual meeting. Now, I know this is called the owner's meetings by many, but it's the NFL annual meeting officially where coaches, GMs, owners get together, vote on things like the kickoff rule hasn't gone through yet. Hip drop, that is out. Among other rules being debated and discussed that we will get to with many of our guests, including tonight's opening guest, D'Amico Ryans. Also coming up, Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. We'll get into it with Alex Marvez of SiriusXM NFL Radio. A bit later on, Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, as we'll go around the AFC East a little bit here, because the Texans are playing the AFC East, among other divisions. But let's start it off with the head coach of your Texans, D'Amico Ryans, at the AFC Coaches Breakfast this morning. Later on, I had a chance to visit with him. Coach, how do you like being here and hobnobbing with the other coaches and owners? How's that for you?
Yeah, it's fun getting a chance to see the other coaches. Just everybody just relaxed. You don't have that kind of competitive, you know, fire going after each other. So it's good to see everybody relax and everybody really, you know, coming together to try to make the game better. When you talk about rule changes and how we can improve and grow our game, it's really, you know, important for us to be a part of that and understand the changes that we make is going to affect this game, and hopefully we're improving the game for good.
So how do you tackle a guy in 2024?
the hip drop tackle, right?
Yeah.
I think to start with the hip drop tackle, it's why it's an issue is, you know, you see guys, some guys get significant injuries when the hip drop tackle occurs, and you know, you don't want defenders just really unweighting themselves and dropping down on a guy's ankle. One, I don't think guys, for me, I've never taught the hip drop tackle. Don't teach it. I never think a defender is really trying to hurt the runner. And so I think it's just inadvertently, it's because of you're trying to keep your head out of the game and guys just aren't putting their body on body and making great contact with runners. Guys are having their entire weight behind a runner when they need to face a guy up a little bit better. And if we, as a defender, if we can face the runner up and put more body on body, more solid contact, like shoulder through the sternum, then and run your feet on contact, that's the biggest thing where guys are not running and accelerating their feet once they wrap up. You have to run your feet on contact. If guys do that, then I think we can get the hip drop out of the game.
So was hip drop a term when you played? Because I feel like it's a recent term. Maybe you were doing it, but maybe it was called something else. Or
Hip drop was never a term. I think it actually started, I was in San Francisco. We were in the playoffs. We were playing against the Cowboys. And Jimmy Ward, he's playing as a nickel, and they checked the ball down to Pollard over the middle of the field, and Jimmy breaks and makes a play, ends up with his head kind of behind him. And he takes him down very quickly, and Pollard ends up, unfortunately, having a high ankle sprain. And I think that's where the hip drop tackle started to – the name of the hip drop started to show up because it was in the playoffs. A lot of eyes were on that game, and it was such a great player in Pollard who goes down with a significant injury. And so I think that's where it gained the most attention.
After the season, one of the things you said was you want to be so strong up front defensively. And I know we're not done yet. There's still some free agency. There's the draft, obviously. How do you feel about some of the acquisitions you've made and how strong you are right now at the moment?
Yeah, at this moment, I feel really, really good about what we were able to do up front, starting with Danil. I think he's a guy who's done it for a while in his league, a double-digit sack guy. Guy who is a Houstonian, being able to bring him back to Houston. He was excited about that piece, being able to play in front of his family in his hometown. D'Nico Autry is a guy who just – he's relentless. He loves football, right? And you can see that on the tape. Well-respected all across the league. He's done it for a long time. Guy is all ball all the time, so excited to add him and his versatility. D'Nico's played the end. He's also played – interior defensive tackle, so we'll try to move him around in similar ways and try to put him in the best position to affect the quarterback. And so just adding, you know, multiple guys, adding Mario Edwards, Tim Settle, Foley, just added a lot of depth to the defensive line, because I truly believe, and if you want a great defensive line, you need eight guys who can really get after it. We can rotate guys so nobody gets worn out. And I think we've added, you know, some really good guys. We'll see, you know, what happens when the pads come on.
How about having Aziz in that linebacking core, Coach?
Yeah, Aziz is, you know, a young player I was able to add when I was early in my coaching career.
Yeah.
I was able to coach Aziz. We got him as an undrafted free agent out in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who he's going to bring outstanding leadership to our locker room, not only to our defense, but to the locker room. He's a leader. He is a intense player. He loves football. And I think he can – really help our young guys on defense, but he's seen what successful defenses look like, seeing how we should operate, and he's going to bring some energy to our team for sure.
I won't ask you about everybody, but one more, Joe Mixon on the offensive side, and such a great receiving running back as well as a runner.
Right, that's the thing that set Joe apart, right? Being able to change the game when it comes to the passing game, right?
Yeah.
I think you can, if you can check the ball down, and you know, for CJ, having multiple weapons, but when you can check the ball down to your running back or in the screen game, it's another place where I think Joe has excelled in his career. I think he's going to, open up the offense big time for us, right? Getting Dalton back was big, but also getting Joe back it helps when you can run the ball. Joe has been consistent 1,000-yard runner in his league. He's a tough runner. We've gone against him for the past couple of years, and Joe is always a tough guy to bring down. And I think with his style of play, right, and how we want to get better running the football, I think Joe helps us in that regard.
Yeah, you mentioned Dalton, and one of the things you told us at the Combine about a month ago was you want enough of your own guys coming back. How important is that continuity that you have a year under your belt with a lot of these players?
Yeah, that's huge, right? When you can have guys come back for the second time around where guys are not trying to just learn the playbook, right? Mm-hmm. Guys are actually trying to get better, right? I think when you change schemes, everybody's trying to catch up and make sure we're speaking the same language because it's new to everybody. So all the players are – you're still thinking. And you can't play as fast just because, oh, what was that turn? Now, man, I've heard it before. I've done that technique before. I know what the coach is asking me. Now, can I probably improve my footwork? Can I improve my eye distance? Can I improve on those little things, which I think will set us apart?
What about having the guys back in the building soon enough? Because off-season conditioning just a few weeks away. You must be so fired up to get players to coach again.
Yeah, it seemed like we just finished, right?
Yeah.
And now we're talking about guys coming back. We need a little more time. No, it'll be definitely exciting to get the players back. The players bring the energy in the building. So it'll be exciting, right, to get the guys back and to get to work as our new 2024 team. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm excited for all those guys to start getting to know each other, right? I think every year is a new year, so we have to do a great job this year of learning each other, learning our teammates, and truly connecting.
All right, uniforms. We can't reveal things, but something got out, and Cal McNair put on Reddit,
yeah.
Hey, Nico Tank, here's what these white uniforms look like anyway. What is your thought on that in general? I know you just want to play football and coach it, but what about that?
Great job, Cal. Great job. Way to save the day. But, I think, you know, in this new age of ball, like players are, they're definitely excited about the look.
Yeah,
right? I think for us to get an updated look, I think it's needed. You know, we've had our units for over 20 years now, so it's time for a little upgrade. And I think it's a nice spin on what we've had, and I think the players will really enjoy the fresh new look.
Coach, thanks a lot for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you, Mark.
There's head coach DeMeco Ryans. As promised, let's get right into it. NFL Network newsbreaker Tom Pelissero. Tom, first of all, before we get into NFL stuff, doing what you do, how surgically attached are you to your phone? Do you ever get how many feet away from it? 10 feet, you start to get a little nervous. How does all that work in your life? I'm joking around, but I know that's got to be a serious thing for you.
So I would say the revolutionary part was when I got an Apple Watch, 5 years ago or so, which have the haptics on it. So you hypothetically, you can have the phone here, and it's going to hit your wrist.
Yep.
And that was a product of my wife constantly saying, put down your phone. Well, then when I'd, put it over here, I'd have the ringer on. So it would just be bleep, 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 over and over with text messages and Twitter alerts. And so the Apple Watch, really, that might have saved my marriage. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, it's got to be a thing because you have to have it. You have to always be plugged in. You're holding it right now. what is your level of anxiety around that, Tom, doing your job?
I mean, it depends what's going on. If there's something big that's potentially coming, then you have a little bit higher anxiety level. I think that that's fair to say. You know, there were, you know, give you an example. So during free agency, when we're doing 14 hours of free agency frenzy on NFL Network, and there's so much going on, this was the busiest Monday of all time. And I was pretty sure Sam Darnold was going to get done to the Vikings, but it was like midnight, and I needed to get some sleep because I'd be back up at 4 a.m. and back on TV again. So I slept with my AirPods in, and between me and Rappaport, who were working on that one together, one of us, as long as one of us woke up to the text, we were going to be okay.
Right.
Ian ended up being the one who did it. I must have rolled over on the air mattress and had my AirPod fall out. But, like, you know, you try to find the least weird, most effective ways to curb some of that.
What is that partnership like with you and Ian? Because you just mentioned a part of it, but you guys have to partner up on some things,
yeah,
right?
I mean, I think that we work independently. It's just that sometimes you're in the same bucket and you kind of are talking to the same people and you figure that out. And so it's just easier to have two people just working on it together as opposed to trying to beat each other's heads in, because then you end up doubling up on calls to certain people. You know, again, I think that we work independently a lot. We have our own things plenty, but it's, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, this is one that's just going to be simpler for everybody involved if we just do it together. And in that case, worked out. And it was a 1 a.m. break that I woke up and found out we had actually gotten out when I was up at 4 a.m.
Tom Pelissero with us on Texans Radio. Okay, these meetings, can you paint the picture for the listener? What's important to you? How do you work these meetings? Because the hallways, owners, GMs, coaches walking by, sometimes at the bar late at night. How do you handle that, Tom?
Well, I think that it's all that. You know, I think that there's, you know, obviously they're in meetings a lot of the time, and, you know, those meetings break, and so people are around. But, like, during, like, especially today at the meeting, it's kind of nonstop. There's not a lot of, like, you know, small talk time.
Yep.
Now, last night at the bar, Friday night at the bar, there's more, you know, there's people around. It's more like, you know, just seeing people in person.
Yeah.
You know, I spend so much of my time these days locked in the basement studio, and that's where I do, you know, the insiders from and everything else. And so, you know, actually getting FaceTime and reminding people that you're not an avatar and you exist from the waist down, because all anybody ever sees is this part of me. You know, that stuff's always valuable.
Well, the insiders is a great show. I watch it myself. How do you enjoy that format versus some of the other things you do, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, every show has its own feel. And we're doing the insiders here 1 o'clock Eastern, both Monday and Tuesday here at the league meeting. I think that the fun part of that is it's just insiders, you know, and that, you know, I love so many of our hosts and, you know, guys like Andrew Siciliano and Rhett Lewis and Patrick Claibon, we've done NFL Now with before. You know, with this show, though, it's all insiders. It's me, it's Mike, it's Ian, it's Judy Batista, and it's just, you know, a conversation. I think that's just makes it a lot of fun, because you're just, you know, there's a lot of kind of inside stuff. There's definitely a lot of jokes and ripping on Ian and things like that, you know, kind of elevate it a little bit. But it also, you know, when big news happens during the show or right before the show, that's when we're at our best, because we just got a bunch of people who are, you know, you end up living the job to a large degree.
Right.
You end up, you know, every second of my day that I'm not with my kids and my wife is basically prep for the show. So I need to know, because I'm the host, I have to run the show, so I need to know, like, what's going on. But in terms of, like, prepping the material and the information, other than just the calls I make all day anyway, there's really not a lot. You kind of show up, you have fun, but you try to give people information. And that's, you know, in a very cluttered and changing media environment, being able to give people information and entertainment, I think, is it's a good mix for us.
Tom Pelissero joining us. How do you handle the draft, Tom?
I'll start looking at the draft when I get back from spring break with my kids, which is my 1 week that I take every year. How about this? I'm flying back on Wednesday from Orlando to Minnesota, getting my wife and kids, and we're on the first flight back to Orlando for a week. I do stuff at the Senior Bowl, so I get to know a lot of the quarterbacks through that. But really, I don't watch a lick of tape. I don't study guys, because I find that when I do that, I end up with a bunch of dumb conclusions, because I just don't know football well enough. Like, that's the honest truth. It's like, I can watch and be like, ooh, yeah, like, his ball placement, I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I just call people. You know, enough people, you just call people within the league. And, you know, what you try to do is, because, you know, everyone always says, oh, everyone lies before the draft. I mean, some people do. Other people don't really have a vested interest in it. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, everything's, you know, being kept off the record, it's just like, they're educating me on things, and you kind of get a feel if you talk to enough people. All right, this is how the league sees players. And there's sometimes where, you know, I get through all those conversations and I've met the player and, you know, you get to the draft and, you know, sometimes that guy you thought was going to be in the first slides, you know, to the second or third. And you're like, right. where did I, you know, get that wrong? But, you know, I think that that's part of the challenge of it. Again, you know, lean on what you do well. What I do is I know people. I do not know. I know enough about football. I don't mean to completely bash myself here, but, like, I'm not a scout. I'm not a coach. Right. I can't be like, ooh, you should have sunk in cover two. I don't know.
Leave that to DJ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're a beat writer, which I was for a long time, like, you educate yourself on these things, sure. and you talk to coaches, and you have people explain to you a scheme. So I know enough, but I also know enough to get myself in trouble. And if I start mm-hmm. trying to pick out these different things as opposed to just asking the people who do it for a living, I'm probably doing everybody a disservice.
Tom, what are your thoughts on the Texans' story from the hiring of DeMeco Ryans to making the playoffs to where they are now?
Well, I think that you have to go all the way back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, they've been through so many different transitions when you mm-hmm. think about from, you know, Rick Smith and Brian Game being there and Jack Easterby being there and obviously, you know, Nick coming in and through all the different coaches. There were so many people involved. You know, obviously, you go through several different coaches, and you've got David Culley, and you've got Levy Smith. But, you know, Nick is well-respected in terms of a scout. He's done an unbelievable job. Then all of a sudden, everything was dialed up for DeMeco Ryans. Once you got the right guy in, it was able to take off. And I think that that's, you know, the biggest part of it. Like the Deshaun Watson trade, the way that that played out, the return they got was massive. And that played a big role in it. But it was also some of those other types of moves, getting the right type of people in the building, and it all came together. You know, they still got work to do. You know, they were, what, a 10-win team last year. They went to the playoffs. You know, there's still growth. I was at the playoff game in Baltimore. Like, there's clearly, you know, growth on top of that. But their processes, which is, I think, a huge part of building a successful operation, their processes have led them to a lot of smart moves. When you look at who they ended up with at quarterback, Nick being bold enough to go up and get Will Anderson as well. You're getting not just the right types of players, but the right type of people. And every time I watch a DeMeco Ryans post-game, you know, celebration, I'm always just struck by, I want to be in that locker room. Like, I want to be a part of that. It looks like such a fun environment. We've seen that before where sometimes you get a placebo effect that, hey, it's new, it's different, and then year two, crash back to reality, and you go 6-11, and it's fire the coach. But it feels real with DeMeco and with C.J. Stroud. And with Nick Caserio obviously running a lot of the stuff here, it just feels like they've got something that could be really special. And, oh, yeah, they still have a lot of resources to continue building the roster, which Nick obviously went into a different type of mode in this offseason. When you're, you know, trading for a veteran running back, you're mm-hmm. doing that because you're thinking, we're finally – this is not about, hey, we got to build the whole thing from the ground up. They've been doing that. Now it's, hey, we might be a piece or two away from really, really competing here. And that's where, you know, some of those types of moves, they make sense for where the Texans are at.
Tom, one more for you. I know what you do is totally objective, the way you present everything. But is there a team, you mentioned Minnesota, is there a team that has your heart deep down?
Well, I grew up as a Vikings fan, you know, watching them from, you know, I was born in 1981. So it's through, you know, late Bud Grant days.
Tommy Kramer.
Days. Yeah, Tommy Kramer.
From Rice.
Rich Gannon, Sean Salisbury, Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham. There were a lot of quarterbacks. Jeff George was in there. Yeah, I mean, you grow up, you know, in it. That's where my passion comes from. My dad grew up a Vikings fan in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They got the Minneapolis TV station, or excuse me, like the Minnesota Market TV station out of Duluth, Minnesota.
Wow.
So rather than having Lions games or Packers games, they had Vikings games on in the Upper Peninsula. So he was a Vikings fan since 1961. You know, he imparted that, not just the Vikings, but just sports in general and football. And I always had a great passion for it. I didn't play football, unless you consider like third grade youth flag football. You know, I mean, look at me. I still weigh like a buck 55. I'm not a football player, but I grew up with a great passion for the stories of people and, you know, playing Super Tecmo Bowl and playing fantasy football, you know, with my uncles. And, you know, I think that all kind of, you know, played into me doing what I do now. When you make it your job, though, and you're doing it objectively, and even when you're a beat reporter, my first job out of college was 2003, working at KFAN Radio, covering the Vikings.
Oh,
I was making $8 an hour, 20 hours a week with no benefits. Not a shot of K fan. Just saying. That's how a lot of people
Paul
came up.
Was Paul Allen there
that's
yet?
How, oh, PA was there. And PA was one of the many people who helped give me a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. My second year there, he hosted a show called Vikings Uncensored every Monday. I think it was Monday nights at a sports bar. And he brought me in as the co-host. And I was 23 years old and had no business. You know, PA is probably younger then than I am now, which is a really scary thought. But you know, he was one of many advocates that I had who kind of brought me in. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you do it as a job, I think that you lose that ability to truly root. I still have, you know, everybody from my in-laws to obviously my dad and my uncles. I get a lot of Vikings texts from, like, yeah. They're still very into it. And so that's the team that I grew up with. But, man, at this point, it's just, you know, you root for good stories. You root for, I think, you know, the people that you like within the league. Mm-hmm. I stay in touch with so many different people. And, you know, those guys that you grew up in the business with who are quality controls when I was a young beat reporter. Right. Or they were players then, and now they're the coaches. You know, those are, like, the cool stories. And a lot of times they're playing against each other, and that's just the nature of it, right? Which is why you can't root. You can just be happy for the people who have good things happen to them. And you want the good people to succeed.
That's great stuff, Tom. Thanks so much for joining us.
You got it.
Our visit with Tom Pelissero, Alex Marvez from SiriusXM NFL Radio. Nobody covers more information in less time than Alex Marvez, who knows your Texans very well among all the other NFL teams. So let's hear from him next on Texans Radio. Keeping it going here in Orlando, NFL annual meeting. Mark Vandermeer with you. And if you missed D'Amico Ryans or Tom Pelissero, this show will be on podcast soon enough. But right now, let's get into it with Alex Marvez from SiriusXM NFL Radio. Nobody knows more about this league than Alex. I really feel that way. You're going to get a ton of information in the next several minutes. Check it out. Alex, great to see you as always. We're in your home state. You got to feel good about that.
Yeah, not too bad. And about a nice couple-hour drive from Gainesville, Florida, to get down here to the Magic City of Orlando. And a lot of business going on here. But I got to tell you, you know, I'm looking forward, hopefully, to my training camp visit back to Houston.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mark, the past couple years I've gone, maybe I was the bad luck charm. I don't know what it was, but it appears that even I couldn't ruin it for the 2023 Houston Texans. What a pleasant surprise. I know for you personally, it must have been so much fun calling games for this team. I mean, you know, a likable group. And really, and knowing, too, the best is yet to come.
Yeah, so much fun. C.J. Stroud, what a revelation. And D'Amico Ryans, I knew that when he got hired, it was going to be so much better. But who knew it was going to take that little amount of time to get that much better? But as you know, Alex, year-to-year league, right? You see it time and time again. What does it take to stay in that hunt in the playoffs? And look at Buffalo and teams that just can't quite get over the hump. The Dolphins are one of them as well. It's tough.
Listen, I don't want to disparage any other general manager in the league, but how does Nick Caserio not win Executive of the Year in the NFL?
You're preaching to the choir.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, how does D'Amico not win Coach of the Year? I know that Stefanski did a great job, but.
Yeah, that was a tough one. And, you know, that's also where I think sometimes voters, there's that recency bias that goes on. I can tell you, you know, the last thing you see might be the most lasting impression that you have. I mean, first, we had DeMar Hamlin, you know, come back from death. That's a pretty good comeback, right? Comeback player of the year. And then you had Joe Flacco, and he didn't even play half a season in Cleveland. He's winning this award?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And listen, no disparaging Joe Flacco here, but, you know, sometimes it's what's happening, or maybe your mind is set on something, and the Brown story was such an interesting story, a good story. And I'll be candid with you. Had Houston taken care of business against Cleveland, you know, in the regular season, maybe voters are looking at this a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But it didn't go the Texans' way. But, man, they got hot. They got going. But to me, with Nick Caserio, when we're talking about a team that was the second-worst team in the NFL in 2022 – and to make the quantum leap that it did, to get it right at the quarterback position, the Will Anderson trade, which I was highly critical of because I couldn't understand, you know, the Texans, they're not going to be good this year. Why are they trading away this first-round pick for a pass rusher? Well, now I know why, right? And it ends up being the number 23 overall pick in this year's draft, and you would have never gotten a player of Will Anderson's, you know, ability, you know, with that type of selection. So a brilliant move there. Dalton Schultz, the Bingham baller at tight end. You know, Devin Singletary. I mean, all these great one-year contracts that this team was able to build upon. And then the drafts continue to help this Texans team. I mean, you see what Tank Dell brought to the table. And you just wonder, you know, could the Texans have made even more noise in the playoffs had Tank been available to them? Unfortunately, he wasn't. But Nico Collins coming into his own, that's a sign of good coaching. When you see players getting better, this defense responding to what D'Amico Ryans put in. And I think going to be even better next year with some of the acquisitions that they've made. So, man, I am bullish on this Texans team. It's just, it's fun. You know what I mean? To see this franchise rise from where it was. Because, Mark, every year I'd come out for training camp. And listen, I went through David Culley. I went through Lovie Smith. And Bill O'Brien. And it's just sometimes at the end it was just, you know, of Bill's tenure, it was hard going out there and, like, trying to generate enthusiasm. Like, I loved, like, when players bought, you know, they spoke so highly of David Culley. And God bless, the man is a good man. Mm-hmm. But difficult circumstances. Lovie Smith spoke really highly of him. I was drinking the Kool-Aid. In fact, I thought maybe this Texans team could be one of the NFL's big surprises. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Davis Mills didn't take the steps that they thought for a variety of different reasons. So when I went out there to camp last year, I was just really skeptical about what the 2023 Texans would look like, but they are legit.
Well, Texans fans listening can tell you know your stuff. There's no question. SiriusXM NFL Radio, Alex Marvez with us. All Elite Wrestling, I'll get to that in a moment as well. But the Texans last to first in the division, and I think it's 19 out of 21 years or something like that where that has happened in this league. Any thoughts on who was not that good last year, who might be good this year? The Jets obviously come to mind with Aaron Rodgers. What about the Chargers with Jim Harbaugh? What are your thoughts on that situation?
Well, how about the Jacksonville Jaguars? I mean, let's be candid here. Yeah. The second half of the season, they were not good. Mm. They could not get things going for a variety of reasons. Had an interesting conversation with Doug Peterson that you can listen to on the SiriusXM app if so inclined. And, you know, how he was explaining, we've got to do a better job not only of coaching, but of coaching younger players. We need to be able to get our rookies on the field faster. Mm. We're not doing that well enough. So I think it's going to be a very interesting year in Jacksonville. They're continuing to talk with Trevor Lawrence about a potential contract extension. I don't know if he was handled properly by Jaguars coaches. You know, the medical staff, that's always a tricky deal, and I'm going to shy away from that one. But, you know, Trevor, when he didn't have a week of practice or even was out there on a Friday, not so good. On Sunday. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I'm gobsmacked at the Tennessee Titans and paying Calvin Ridley, you know, $23 million a year on the average on a four-year contract. Were they watching the same Calvin Ridley that I was, not being maybe in the right spot when he was trying to connect with Trevor Lawrence?
I'm in agreement on this, yeah.
But I do think, though, that there's talent in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. If Trevor Lawrence truly is a franchise quarterback and is able to stay healthy, then I think that they're a team that could really rebound. You know, when I think for the Chargers, that roster is so bereft at so many different spots. I mean, they really have a long way to go. I think Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. You got the franchise quarterback. We'll see what it ends up looking like. I'm just not so sure that, you know, how big a step they're going to be able to take. It's such an interesting division because remember 2 years ago, Russell Wilson comes on board. Derek Carr is with the Raiders, and he's trying to, you know, buy into the Josh McDaniels thing. And you're thinking, man, this is a division where the Chiefs really could be in some trouble, right? Like maybe one of these teams are going to catch them. Mark, the way I'm looking at this right now, I mean, this could be a cakewalk. To a division title. And it's tough to go to Kansas City and win. Just ask the Miami Dolphins, who are still thawing out from their first-round game. But, of course, this Chiefs team, a little different as well, going on the road to win in the playoffs. But I think those teams, I mean, the Jets will be better. But, I mean, I've said this on air. I'm already looking ahead to 2025 for them. And I hate to be like that. But don't you just get the feeling, Mark, that, like, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers, what he has left, do they really have Super Bowl DNA? Last year, you were just, you know, you were thinking, man, this is a team that really, you know, has a potential to be good as long as they're not the Jets again. You know what I mean? And then they jetted. You know, first game, four plays in, and Aaron Rodgers tears his Achilles, and they're heck in a handbasket at that point. So, you know, I just, that's a weird team for me to look at. I think Cincinnati, you know, the whole key, can you just keep Joe Burrow? Like, maybe don't practice him from the end of June or when you break for the off season up until week one, because every year since his rookie campaign, he has come into the season injured. And with that has led to a team that's had to play catch up all the time. Right. Yep. But I do like some of the moves that they made. I think that they're going to be a dangerous team. And of course the Pittsburgh Steelers, fascinating. I talking with TJ Watt the other day at the 101 Awards at Kansas City. He brought this up, not me. He said he was embarrassed by the fact he has never won a playoff game in his career.
Ooh.
Embarrassed. You got to go all the way back to 2016 before TJ was a member of the Steelers organization for that to have happened. That is wild that he would say that, and he is hoping that Russell Wilson's able to help elevate this team. Did you know they only have $14 million in cap space allocated to their key offensive players, the skill position guys? It's a very strange deal here, so the Steelers can maybe continue to make some hay on the defensive side of the football, the offensive line. Omar Khan isn't afraid to make moves. They're another intriguing team. But you know what, though? Let's be candid here. This AFC South, one of the most fascinating divisions in football, because think about how radically it has changed, you know, in 1 year, 2 years.
Yep.
I mean, now Tennessee may have their franchise quarterback in Will Levis. They brought in a lot of players. I'm not necessarily buying all the offseason moves. You know, we'll see how those expenditures go. But, you know, definitely attempts to make this team better, you know, under Brian Callahan, their first-year head coach. Colts should have their franchise quarterback in Anthony Richardson, and there's a lot to build on there. We know the Texans have their guy, and we know the Jags have their guy. I think Jacksonville, that window of opportunity they had to really differentiate themselves from the AFC South, that window is closed. And if they're going to pull away now, it's going to be a much tougher challenge moving ahead.
Alex Marvez, SiriusXM NFL Radio, and All Elite Wrestling as well. Colts, you did bring them up, and you were talking about Flacco earlier. Flacco with the Colts, it's intriguing because Richardson's injury history, you think, well, maybe Flacco ends up on the field. It worked out well with Minshew. How do you think that would work with Flacco?
Well, the thing we saw with Joe, though, was the more we saw Joe, maybe not so much. And the Houston Texans were proof of that in round one. So, but in Joe's defense, I mean, he wasn't playing with a team that had a running back like Jonathan Taylor because Nick Chubb, you know, was obviously out with that very serious leg injury. Hopefully he's able to make it back. But, you know, Joe, when I talked to Shane Steichen about this at the owners' meetings, you know, he was telling me what he's excited about with Joe Flacco is a guy in the quarterback room who's going to add to the conversation. I mean, he's going to have opinions. He's been there. He's done that. And it's not that he has to take, Anthony Richardson under his wing. Right, he's not just like, remember the Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson dynamic and all the controversy that sort of happened there when Ryan Tannehill said something about, you know, not necessarily embracing being a teacher and all that. But Joe, and any quarterback doesn't have to be. You just watch how Joe Flacco works and you watch the things that he's looking at, and you should be able, through osmosis, to be able to pick up a lot of the things that'll make you a better quarterback. So I like having Joe in that room with Anthony Richardson. But, I mean, listen, Anthony's going to have to adjust his playing style a bit. He can't leave himself so exposed to big hits. And, an interesting conversation that I had with Robert Turbin, my SiriusXM NFL radio co-host, about this. He said, take a look at Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, and sometimes they struggle in the playoffs. Why is that? Well, guess what? For 17 regular season games, sometimes 16 if you could sit out a game, they're taking a beating. They're getting hit because they're exposing themselves. And guess what? Cumulatively, by the time you have your season start in September, when you start getting into January football, these players may not be playing at the same high level. And you look at who the quarterbacks were in this year's conference championship games, and with the exception of Lamar Jackson, they're more pocket guys who are able to avoid the big hits. So I think for Anthony, it's just part of his progression. Listen, I'm a proud Florida Gator. And Mark, sorry, I know you're Canes allegiance. But you will settle in the season opener next year. But my point, though, is I saw him start 14 games in college, and that was it. And he came into the NFL. This was, you know, brave new world, so to speak, for Anthony. And, you know, but now with, you know, getting, you know, Michael Pittman re-signed to a long-term contract, having Jonathan Taylor there and that controversy finished, you know, with, you know, when it came to his contract, I feel the Colts are a good team, but I also feel like they're sort of stuck in the middle class type thing. Like, we'll see if Anthony Richardson, you know, helps them rise above that. But I'm not putting the Colts like, you know, let me just say this. If I have to place money on a long shot Super Bowl contender in the AFC, I'm not putting the ducats, you know, on the Colts. You know, let me just say that.
Alex Marvez with us, SiriusXM NFL Radio and All Elite Wrestling. Wait, along the lines of playing well in the playoffs, being at your best, how surprised were you about the Chiefs' run, and how did you feel during the regular season when they were losing some games and you thought, oh, the Raiders, and really? Are they really going to be that good when you get to the postseason?
Okay, Mark, you're old enough to have watched the A-team like me, right?
Yeah.
George Peppard, Mr. T, a show that debuted after the Super Bowl, by the way, back when we were youngsters in the 1980s.
It's a
little NFL tie-in, right? And of course, it was Hannibal who had the famous expression, I love it when a plan comes together, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Andy Reid couldn't have forecast this, but think about how fortuitous everything was after the Christmas Day debacle against the Raiders. And I'm going to get back to that at the end of this conversation. Mm-hmm. But the next week, you're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, initially one of the most anticipated games of the regular season until Joe Burrow goes down with injury. And then at that point, you're facing Jake Browning at home, you know, on New Year's Eve. And the Chiefs were able to pull that out. Didn't play particularly well on offense, a lot of Harrison Butker field goals. But you win, you're locked into the 3 seed. So the next week is a bye week.
Yeah.
Everyone's able to rest and catch their breath. Then you play the Miami Dolphins in one of the coldest games in NFL history. The Dolphins are beat up. They're not a cold weather team. And, you know, once the frostbite subsided, Kansas City wins that game. By playing on the road, it helped this team refocus. You know what I mean? It was one of these challenges to this team. The big thing, they beat Buffalo, but in that second-round playoff game, the Chiefs didn't beat themselves. You notice no false start penalties, unlike, unfortunately, the Texans against the Ravens when this was a team that had the yips, you know, with that crowd noise. Kansas City handled it extremely well. Patrick Mahomes wasn't sacked. No drop passes. I mean, this was a Chiefs team that played big-time football, and they had that DNA, and they had been in the big moments, and I think that paid dividends. Then you played the Ravens. You scored enough early on, you know, and the Ravens imploded in the second half on offense. And, you know, that the touchdown that wasn't right near the goal line by Legarius Sneed and the Lamar interception. So you get to that. I mean, that's a lot of things coming together. But one thing I was able to get from Clark Hunt, the Chiefs owner and CEO, et cetera, he was saying that after that loss to the Raiders, he went into the office with Andy Reid and they had a heart-to-heart talk about the team. And Andy went with a step-by-step plan about how he was going to get things turned around. He had a vision about this, and he knew he had to make some personnel changes, and no one is saying it, but Kadarius Toney, you notice he disappeared. Yep. When it came to the offensive side of the football. They weren't going to put anything more on him. They were going to recalibrate some things. And the one thing, too, that kept getting stressed, and it was a theme in the Chiefs locker room, unity. We cannot turn on each other. And it would have been very easy for the defense to get frustrated at what was going on offense. Even though, you know, Mahomes and company had a lot of success, it would have been very easy for this defense, you know, to turn on the offense or say, why aren't you guys doing your job? Because the defense had played so well, you know, really throughout almost the entirety of the season. They stayed together. They stayed the course. And, again, that's where I think it's, you know, for the Texans, it's a learning lesson what took place last year. You know, listen, if the Texans were one and done in the playoffs, still people are still going to think it's a successful season.
Sure.
But instead, you win, you beat Cleveland the way you did, you had an incredible moment at Energy Field, and then boom, you know, up and you're getting that experience. So for one half, gave the Baltimore Ravens all that they could handle. Second half, things didn't go the way that anyone would have liked, but I just feel like that's the sort of thing that can carry over. Next time we get that big game setting and a team's on the ropes, because this happened to the Detroit Lions as well. Remember, Detroit, you know, in San Francisco, up by 17, and, you know, had the collapse. So in this case with Houston, I just think this is something that this team can learn from, is really going to help in the future.
Alex, any thoughts on the rules conversations here at the NFL meetings, kickoff, hip drop, that kind of thing?
The kickoff rule, you know, as we speak right now, and this is on a Monday afternoon, and I'm not sure this is airing. I mean, they're trying to get this in before the draft. I thought that was interesting because there was some thought that maybe the owners would table this rule for a further vote in May after more review. But there were some coaches and general managers who said, hey, I want to know how this affects our draft. Because if you're going to have a returner who now actually plays more than a ceremonial role of standing back there and having the ball fly above his head, you know, you may want to invest in a returner if you don't have one on your team currently. So this is something that's going to change the way the rosters are comprised. So we'll see how that goes. I'm willing to give it a shot. And, you know, what the NFL is trying to do here is help field position to increase scoring. Mm-hmm. Used to be that we averaged 45 points a game. Now we're at 43.5 points per game. And, you know, while the league won't say what the real reason is, which is that quarterback play is pretty dreadful and, you know, guys are getting injured, you know, nonstop, that's really the big reason that the scoring's down. But the point, though, is that they're trying to find ways to goose the offense a little bit and putting this back on kickoffs rather than, I mean, 12 kickoffs for touchbacks in the end zone in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
12. I mean, terrible. As for the swivel tackle on hip drops, listen, you know, you and I were both around in the NFL when Rich McKay brought this up in his news conference, how defensive coaches were kvetching about, oh my gosh, you know, how are we going to teach, you know, not going for the upper body area when it came to tackling, and how do we teach this? Guess what? They learned. They adjusted. And by the way, those who do hit high still, including former Texan safety Kareem Jackson, they pay a heavy price. Like, now they miss game checks and they're suspended. So they've gotten that play largely out of the game. The swivel tackle, which is what they're talking about, where a player grabs someone from around the hip area, lifts, uses that the player, the offensive player's body, sort of as a lever to give themselves leverage and then come crashing down on a player's legs, it should be taken out of the game. It leads to a 20 to 25% higher injury rate. The league will try to you know, go over this rule in terms of, you know, teach it, explain it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the officials will necessarily get it right all the time, but I understand at the heart of the game, it is trying to show that football cares and is trying to be safe. And one thing that the NFL touted during its news conference is how high school participation is up 6%. You know, compared to recent years. So it's trending up, which means that more parents are of the belief that football is safer now. And that all starts at the top in the NFL. I really believe that's a big reason, because things that happen in the league and the pro league trickle down to college, trickle down to high school, and should hopefully trickle down to youth leagues.
All right, Alex, All Elite Wrestling, what can you update us with? Are you coming back to Houston anytime soon?
Good question. At the moment, I have not seen the updated calendar. I do not know. But and we always do the Texas two-step at some point, right? And yeah. I'd love to be back. We were actually in Edinburgh, Texas, not too long ago. Is that about an hour outside of town, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Sounds about right, I guess.
Fort Bend or something, I think is what it is, that area? Yeah. So, you know, and we had a nice crowd. This was back in October. This is where Sting announced that he was going to be wrestling his final match, ending a 38-year career, which he did, you know, earlier this month in North Carolina and had, you know, 16,000-plus, so we couldn't pack any more people in the arena. Mm-hmm. And but now we move on. You know, we've got another show, AEW Dynasty, coming up April 21st in St. Louis. You know, we got All In is coming up in London once again. We've got more than 40,000 tickets sold at Wembley Stadium for August 25th. I mean, it's just so exciting to be around one of the greatest, you know, professional wrestling company startups that there's ever been. The talent when it comes to in-ring work, it might be the greatest roster ever assembled in terms of big names. We've just signed, you know, Kazuchika Okada, one of the biggest stars in Japanese history. Will Ospreay from the UK. Mercedes Moné making her return to professional wrestling. I mean, these are big-time performers, right, that go with an already stacked roster. So it's been a joy. If you haven't checked out wrestling in a while, please give us a shot. TBS on Wednesday nights for AEW Dynamite, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 to 9 in the Houston area. Rampage Friday nights, 9 o'clock Central on TNT. Also on TNT, AEW Collision, which is 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays.
One of the few TV programs that still gets high ratings, along with the NFL, of course.
We're pretty much carrying the industry, how I like to look at it. But yeah, you know what? And no streaming deals yet. But trust me, we'll see what the future holds.
Alex, thanks a lot for joining us.
Always, Mark. Thank you.
There's Alex Marvez from SiriusXM NFL Radio. Now, coming up, we're going to talk AFC East and really NFL at large with Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And tomorrow, you don't want to miss this, the McNairs will be on the show. They will lead off. Mike Reese from ESPN also scheduled to appear, among others. Jim Miller from SiriusXM NFL Radio as well. But next up, Chris Perkins. Let's get into it here on Texans All Access. Man, what a show it's been already. We've had D'Amico Ryans, Tom Pelissero, Alex Marvez, beefy visit with him. Let's get into it with South Florida Sun Sentinel writer Chris Perkins, who has covered the Heat, the Hurricanes, covers the Dolphins for many, many years, formerly of The Athletic as well. Chris Perkins. Chris, tell me, Miami, what's been the biggest development this offseason for the Dolphins?
Boy, it's been the departures, Mark. It's the losing Christian Wilkins at defensive tackle, losing Rob Hunt at right guard, losing Jerome Baker at linebacker, Xavier Howard at cornerback. So there have been some major losses. What I think is the incoming talent has not surpassed the outgoing talent. And that's an issue because your outgoing talent didn't even get you a playoff victory. And the goal here with the Dolphins is to win a Super Bowl. That's why they have Tyreek Hill, Teron Armstead, Jalen Ramsey. But I think they're getting further away from that goal this offseason because of the talent they lost. To me, one thing that they can do is use the existing talent differently. So one thing, their new defensive coordinator, Anthony Weaver, who came in from Baltimore, said that he wants to use Jalen Ramsey as a chess piece and have him shadow other wide receivers. Vic Fangio was hesitant to do that. So that's using personnel differently. Get a power running back. Get a number three receiver, whether it's your slot receiver or a tight end. That's using personnel differently. So that's what I think the Dolphins have to do this year. The talent won't be as great individually, but if you deploy that talent differently, I think you can get a better result.
Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joining us. What's the relationship like between Tua and the fan base right now?
It is Tua was a hero 2 years ago, 1 year ago, an almost godlike presence. Now he's a little more human. He stayed healthy all season last season for the first time, I think, in the previous 5 years, going back to his last year at Alabama. But I also think Tua is almost maxed out. You know, he was a Pro Bowl starter last year. But I'm not sure that Tua has that elite gift of being able to make guys around him better. You know, you can be a Pro Bowl-level player, but to me, kind of that next level is making guys around you better. I'm not sure that Tua is going to get to that level. And that's no slam on Tua. That's just kind of the way it is. So that also goes along with me as using your personnel differently. I think you've got to get Tua some more help out there on the field, offensively and defensively.
Chris, from your perspective in South Florida, who's going to be better this year, a healthy Aaron Rodgers and the Jets or the Buffalo Bills?
Ooh, boy, that is a good one. I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills because, look, Josh Allen is a magician. Now, he'll keep both teams in the game at the same time, but yeah, the guy is a magician. He can make those plays. And then going beyond Josh, I think Buffalo has a good team. And, you know, that's a breaking news. Yeah, Buffalo is good.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they're Super Bowl good. But I think that they will be the best team in the AFC East. Maybe the Dolphins beat them for the title. The Jets, I think they still need so much. I want to see that offensive line. I want to see Aaron Rodgers, first of all. How is he going to look coming off that Achilles? And I want to see what their run game looks like. I want to see what the pass game looks like. We didn't see Aaron Rodgers with the Jets last year, so a lot of this stuff is still unknown. And how is it all going to work together? So I'm going to go with the known on that one, Mark. I'm going with Buffalo.
Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel with us on Texans Radio here at the NFL meetings. All right, you've covered a lot of things. You've actually done news. Mm-hmm. You've done the Miami Heat for a time, the Hurricanes, glory days. That's where we met. Yep. So with the NFL, what strikes you as being one or two of the most important things in being consistently good? Because I know the Dolphins themselves – it's been real tough to get over that hump and be a successful playoff team now that they're winning again. But in general, what do you think, Chris?
Man, I think it's two things. Don't overstate the quarterback position too much. And what I mean by that is the quarterback obviously is the single most important position on the field, but quarterbacks have limitations. And so if your quarterback isn't the man, if you don't have Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady, get this guy some help. And I think that's one of the things that coaches kind of fall short on. And I'm looking at Mike McDaniel, and I mentioned get Tua some help. I think that previously the Dolphins coaches, Adam Gase and Joe Philbin, thought that they could work miracles with Ryan Tannehill. And it was like, you know, in Philbin's case, I worked with Aaron Rodgers. And in Adam Gase's case, I worked with Peyton Manning back in Denver.
Yep.
And so it was like, I know the secrets. I can unlock the secrets. And it's like, yeah, you really can't. It's like Aaron Rodgers didn't really need you, Joe Philbin, and Peyton Manning didn't really need you, Adam Gase. And so I think these coaches get caught up in, I'm a quarterback miracle worker, and I can transform this guy. I hope Mike McDaniel doesn't fall into that with Tua, get Tua some help. So I think one of the things is recognizing your shortcomings as you know, if you don't have the guy at quarterback, get this guy some help. And then I think the other thing is really just knowing how to build a complete team. I like San Francisco because you have a complete team, right? Brock Purdy, you can say whatever you want. Is he a superstar? Is he not? He's effective because he has help. Jalen Hurts, he's effective because he has help. I don't think Jalen Hurts is a superstar. I don't think Dak Prescott is a superstar. They might be paid like it. But these guys need help. So I think if you can build a complete team, it's going to serve you better. I think Baltimore is moving in that direction, right, with all the rushing yards they have all the time. They had that streak of 100-yard rushing games. You've got a two-time MVP as quarterback, but you play butt-kicking defense, and you've got a good run game. And so get these quarterbacks some help. That to me is one of the huge things. Build a complete team. So know your quarterback's limitations and build a complete team. To me, those are two big things to sustainability in this league.
Hey, great to visit with you, Chris. Thanks a lot.
All right, good to see you again, Mark.
There's Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Tomorrow, the McNairs lead off the show among other guests. Coming up, Area 45. Do not miss this show. Have a great night. Go Texans.